How have you been? Letter N. Now, page 127. Naps. Of your life between the ages of 5 and 35 where naps play no part in your daily routine. Outside of that, they are little oases of calm that punctuate the day. I'm looking forward to reaching my 60s so that I can have even more of them. Nice biscuits. Or nice biscuits. No book claiming to be a guide to all things nice would be complete without this titular biscuit, named after the French city of Nice. They were seen as a posh treat for afternoon tea when they first appeared in the 1920s. Nice is not a brand name, and consequently, lots of different companies make them all over the world. The recipes can vary, but all feature coconut as a key ingredient. They tend to have a sprinkling of sugar and, of course, have the word Nice embossed on the top. And if I may be permitted an aside on the word Nice, in my children's school there is a poster that shows the word being thrown into a dustbin. Nice is banned from all composition on the grounds that it isn't descriptive enough, Many teachers share this view. My own editor's mum won't allow the word in the house, and she is a teacher. Enough, I say. There is nothing wrong with the word nice. It doesn't deserve to be ostracised in this way. It has never hurt anyone. I submit the short essay below by way of protest. What I Did on My Holiday by Steve Stack. We drove to Nice in the south of France, where we stopped off for a cup of tea and some nice biscuits. We had a jolly nice time. The end. A nice cup of tea and a sit down. Nothing quite beats it after a long day at work or a bracing walk, perhaps a particularly hectic period of vacuuming, maybe to celebrate finishing the crossword. Plonking yourself down in an armchair with a cuppa and a biscuit is the only solution. Non-iron shirts. Clearly invented by the patron saint of Monday mornings. Northern Lights. The Northern Lights, or Aurora Borealis, to give them their real name, are the greatest light show on earth. Bright, swirling curtains of light and colour that can move and change at great speed. It's like the greatest firework display you can imagine, multiplied by 100. They can be found towards the North and South Poles. They are close to the North Pole, inside the Arctic Circle, and it's far more densely populated than the South, which is why the Northern Lights are better known and perhaps more celebrated than the Southern Lights or the Aurora Australis. They're caused by the magnetic field surrounding the Earth. Just like the poles on a magnet, the Earth's magnetic attraction is greatest at each end. Charged particles in the atmosphere react with these fields and whiz around, bumping into gas atoms, which then give off light. This is happening at such a rate that we get to see some dazzling displays. The frequency and potency of the auroras depend on the strength of solar winds. But I'm not even going to attempt to get into that. Fascinating fact. The Northern Lights are hugely popular with Japanese tourists, who can account for as much as 90% of all the visitors in some notorious viewing locations. Japanese newlyweds are often to be found wandering off for some privacy when the lights kick in, as it is believed to be lucky to conceive a child under the Aurora Borealis. Well, I didn't know that. Oh. In the letter O. Old buildings. There is a certain reverence displayed by most people when they enter an old building, whether it be a church, a town hall, a residence, or a landmark. It is as if history has silenced them for a second. Certainly, it is hard not to ponder the dozens, if not hundreds and thousands of lives that were lived within those walls. The births, marriages, deaths, the day-to-day drudgery, and the moments of inspiration and joy. The space you occupy when inside an old building was, at one time, the centre of someone's life. A life lived long ago, and possibly now forgotten. Although, not quite. I like to think that the memories reside in the bricks, mortar, and beams of these old places. And it is the sense of this personal history that strikes us when we enter them. One man and his dog. If you never saw the television programme, it has been off air for almost a decade, then you might find the concept a little hard to believe. The competitive sheepdog trials on the telly. Originally conceived to fulfil the BBC's countryside brief, it was firmly aimed at a rural audience, but it ended up being hugely popular with city dwellers as well. The format stayed pretty much the same across the 23-year history. The presenters, Phil Drabble was the longest running host, would interview farmers and shepherds while working their land, meeting their sheepdogs and finding out a bit about them. The action would then switch to the set, usually an agricultural show or a country fair, where the contestants and their dogs would battle it out against each other in turn. The dogs had a predetermined course to navigate, which would involve steering sheep around various obstacles, splitting the herd into two, and finally coaxing them into a pen where the farmer would proudly slam the gate shut. Points were scored by a panel of judges for each part of the course, and the winner of each show went through to the next round. The beauty of the programme was the introduction of a dying country art to weekend television screens, and the fact that even the uninitiated quickly became wrapped up in it. It was gripping stuff, while being comfortable at the same time. The shepherd's meaningful whistles and shouts of "Come by" and "Way lad" became part of the fabric of our lives, and those who remember it do so very fondly. Origami. There is a certain magic to taking a sheet of paper and turning it into a monkey, or a swan, or an elephant. If you know how to do it, then you can create wonder in the eyes of your onlookers. It is an art form that has remained popular for hundreds of years, and practically everyone has given it a go at one time or another. Even just to make a water bomb, or that pinch puzzle thing when you count out squares and then unfold it to reveal a forfeit. Contrary to popular belief, origami did not originate in Japan, although the name is of Japanese origin. It was not used to describe paper folding in the West until 1950s, and it's likely that the European and Eastern traditions developed independently of one another. Indeed, in Spain there's a long history of making pajarita, or pajarita, anyway, paper birds, which predates any major contact with Japan or China. In modern origami, credit is given to the creator of a particular design. Some have even painted their models, with their followers gaining pleasure from reenacting the folding sequences to replicate the original. In Japan, it is really seen as an art form and has a wide following. I remember a story of a girl that wanted to fold 1,000 cranes before she died, and that stuck with me. I don't know if she ever completed them all, or whether it was one of those internet stories. P. Paper aeroplanes. The poor man's origami. Not quite as artistic or beautiful, but boy, they can fly. When you first teach a child to make a paper aeroplane and they see their creations soar across the room, they are stunned by the power of flight. With 4 or 5 folds, you can span the heavens. Small piece of magic that all of us can create. John Peel. Joni Mitchell once said something like, "You don't know what you've got till it's gone." Those words have possibly never been more true than when the news came that John Peel had died. He had been part of the oral landscape for so long that his millions of listeners took him for granted. We assumed he would always be there and couldn't imagine radio without him. Well, now we do have radio without him, and it is nowhere near as good. John Robert Parker Ravenscroft was born in Cheshire in 1939. At boarding school, one report mentioned his enthusiasm for unlistenable records, which turned out to be one of the most prescient comments in rock history. He spent the early 60s working as a DJ in America, starting out in Dallas, playing popular hits, but ending up in California, where he aired a more eclectic and experimental selection. He returned to the UK in 1967, only to leave these shores straight away for a stint as a pirate radio DJ, broadcasting from a ship in international waters. It was here that he finally became John Peel, to avoid getting in trouble when the authorities with the authorities under his real name. When the pirate station was shut down, Peel found himself stumbling into a job with the BBC as one of the first Radio 1 DJs. He remained with that station, in one guise or another, right up until his death in 2004. And it was here that he became a legend. He pursued a unique course on the station, playing and championing new and exciting music that could nightly claim to have helped launch the careers of numerous music legends. Every rock fan in the country remembers their stint as a Peel listener, and many never stopped. His career took an unlikely turn when he began hosting Radio 4's Home Truths in 1998, a weekend magazine show that gave over the airwaves to real people with real stories. Peel's warm but deadpan delivery found a whole new audience. And when news of John Peel's death was announced, there was a wave of grief throughout the country. But unlike some less dignified outpourings, this one was tinged with gratitude. Millions of people not only wanted to say goodbye, but also thank you. Roadside tributes were suspended from traffic signs. Hundreds of bands dedicated live numbers to him. Record stores blared out his favourite song, Teenage Kicks by the Undertones. A minute's noise was held, rather than a minute's silence. It was spontaneous, and it was heartfelt, and everyone seemed to think he was a nice bloke, and we miss him. Georges Perec was an obscure, experimental French writer and novelist, whose surreal view of life has amused and inspired many. Many have discovered him. His most famous work, and one you will find in any good bookshop, is the novel Life, a user's manual, in which the entire lives of histories of the residents of a Paris apartment block are frozen in time and recorded within the few seconds following the death of the landlord. Perec was a member of Oulipo, a group of writers determined to introduce formal patterns to contemporary literature. Borrowing rules and methods from disciplines such as chess and mathematics. Perec loved to play with words and was particularly fond of palindromes and lipograms. Palindromes, as I'm sure you are aware, are words or sentences that read the same forwards as backwards. Madam, I'm Adam is a famous example. Well, Perec created in French what is still the longest palindrome ever written, stretching to more than 5,000 words. Lipograms are less common. They are text in which one or more letter are not allowed to be used. His novel La Disparition was published in 1969 and contains the disappearance of a man. It is a sort of literary whodunit, and the letter E does not appear anywhere in the entire novel. I wonder why I did that. Must have taken ages. Georges Perec managed to create the most precise and clever literary constructions without ever once taking them too seriously. He brought a touch of the absurd to his work, and no self-respecting home library should be without a few of his books. He also sported the finest beard and hair combination in modern literature. Fascinating fact. When American writer Gilbert Adair translated Perec's lipogrammatic novel into English, he managed to do so without once using the letter E, possibly a greater feat than the original, although a strict translation of the book's title would be The Disappearance. Adair opted to go with a void, for obvious reasons. Play-Doh. It is not unusual for adults to show nostalgia for some toy or game of their youth, but Play-Doh is probably the only example where grown-ups can get emotional by recalling its smell. Far from the most practical of building materials, it had been stored in its airtight tubs, or it would go hard, so you could never keep anything you made. It was invented accidentally by the McVicker brothers during the 1950s while they were trying to create a wallpaper cleaner. Wallpaper cleaner. Over £1 billion in weight of the stuff has been sold since. Fascinating fact. To celebrate the 50th anniversary of Play-Doh in 2006, a limited edition fragrance was released, which replicated the familiar smell. I remember one, a bit similar to Play-Doh, called Plasticine. Terrible stuff. I think that's enough for today. I hope you're relaxed. Have a lovely time. Take care.
Street. Another girl. She looks so good.